Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is our book reviewer, Nancy Pearl. But today we're not talking about other writers' works, but her first novel. Now, Nancy's written several nonfiction books, her BookLust series of recommended reading titles, but this fall marks her debut as a novelist. George and Lizzie, a novel, tells the funny and poignant story of a love and marriage with two utterly different people. George grew up in a warm, loving family here in Tulsa. Lizzie was the surprise child of two famous psychologists who viewed Lizzie more as an in-house experiment than a daughter to love. George is an optimist, always looking for the good in everyone. Lizzie, a pessimist, who's always looking for that disappointment that's bound to occur. George loves Lizzie utterly and longs to have her agile, nimble mind. Lizzie loves George, but remains unfulfilled and remembers another love she pushed away. George and Lizzie is a story of a real love and marriage with its up and downs, hopes and fears, and some wonderfully funny writing. Nancy Pearl returns to Tulsa to talk about her novel and signed books tonight at 7 at Central Library in conjunction with BookSmart Tulsa. It's part of a 3-night literary event which started last night with Eowyn Ivey and continues tomorrow with Tom Perotta. Nancy Pearl is my guest today here on Studio Tulsa. Nancy Pearl, welcome back to Studio Tulsa.
Thanks, Rich. It's great to be here.
Yeah, after years of reading and writing other writers' work, I have to ask you, why did you decide to write a novel?
Well, I don't think I wouldn't describe it as deciding. It's more that these characters came to me, and it was impossible for me not to think about them all the time and to tell myself stories about them before I fell asleep. And I just finally, after several years, decided, because at that moment, you know, I was thinking about them and I would think about them in different circumstances and their childhoods and what George and Lizzie's relationship was like. And then I was going through a period where I couldn't find anything good to read, you know, anything that good in my sense of anything that met whatever inchoate need I had at that moment. I couldn't find the right book. And I thought, well, here's a book that I'm, you know, here are people that I really enjoy. Why don't I write about them and put it down on paper, as it were?
So you were thinking about a novel.
Yeah, right. You know, the thing that I look for in novels always is, I like character-driven novels. I'm not so interested in plot. I like very quirky characters, and I like kind of a little bit of an unconventional narrative.
And well, certainly in the case of Lizzie, you have a very unconventional character.
Right. It never felt like I thought them up. It always felt like they just were there. And I was sort of uncovering things about them every day, a little bit more about them, until finally it got to the point where when I sat down to start writing down these vignettes that make up the book, it was more like I was debriefing than I was creating. The creation had already been done. It wasn't like I had to decide, should this happen or should that happen? It was always, oh, yeah, this is what happened. So it was very strange.
It was very strange. And you mentioned the vignette quality. There's a vignette quality within the novel.
Exactly. I mean, I started seeing that folder in my computer start getting bigger and bigger. And in the book, each of those little vignettes has a title. So it begins with how they met. Ends, the last one is called The End of Many Things, and that's just how I labeled them. I mean, I was never, till very close to the end of the whole thing, thinking that it was a book. I mean, I wasn't writing it for anyone else. I was writing it for me and making it just the kind of book that I love.
Now, is this writing you've been doing throughout your whole life, or is this just something you started doing in the last few years?
Well, I wrote poetry as an adolescent and into my 20s and early 30s, and then all the lines that came to me as poetry started coming as prose. So I wrote a short story. A line came to me, which was, "My mother talked to us all the time." And clearly that's not poetry. It always was. Seemed to me to be the beginning of a short story. So I wrote the short story, and it ended up getting published in Red Book magazine. and read books said, oh, you know, they loved it. The fiction editor loved it and said, oh, send us everything that you're writing. And I would send them a story, and they would say, oh, the writing is so good, but it's too depressing for our readers. So I just got discouraged and stopped writing.
So when did you start writing again? Was it just a few years ago?
Well, I started writing this George and Lizzie down. And wouldn't it be nice to think that it was, you know, with a pen and a pad of paper? But it was with my MacBook Pro. I would open my MacBook Pro, and it really started about very hit and miss, and I wasn't committed to doing anything. I didn't have any schedule. So I would say like about three or four years ago, I started writing it down, and then it got finally pretty finished about 2 years ago.
Now, I would think as someone who does a lot of reading and talking with writers, that decision to show it to someone must have been an interesting decision.
I had people that I trusted and who were in the book world or were writers themselves, and their responses were positive. And just, you know, they kept saying, keep going, keep going. The problem was for me that it was easy. I mean, because the whole book was in my head, that was the easy part. The hard part was writing it because right. I was so critical of myself. I mean, it was like the self-criticism that we always read about that took place in China during the Cultural Revolution. I mean, it was like I couldn't take
two You were hours. Sending yourself to the country?
Yeah, right. 2 hours was about enough. I mean, that was all I could take of this, having this perfect sentence in my head and then looking at it on the screen and feeling how awful it was. And so I would take a sentence like, I would write it something down like, George took Lizzie's arm. And then I would think, well, what did he do with it? You know, where did he take it? What did she do with one arm? Oh, my God, is this a plot thing that I have to deal with now? And on like that.
And really all it was he was taking your arm.
Exactly. And no one ever is going to stop in a book and pause at that sentence and start deconstructing it. But it was like I fought with every word, which goes against the common advice that you get when you're writing a novel. I mean, if you read the books about writing novels or if you go to writers' workshops, and I certainly looked at some books once I realized what was happening, but what they all say is write a first draft. Don't, you know, by all means, do not correct it. Just write it, get it done, and then go back and do the rewriting. But I couldn't do that. I think it was maybe my poetry background, my writing of poetry. It was every sentence. I couldn't go on to the next one until I had fixed everything that was wrong. And then, of course, the next day, I would read it again, and I would find more things wrong with it. So that part wasn't fun.
So the book that came to you in your head was not an easy write.
Exactly.
I can imagine so, because from our many conversations, you're always struck by a quality of the writing is first and foremost for you.
Right.
So I would think for somebody who's been not in a true, what we would call, book critical sense, but you're a critic. You know, you've been a critic for so long. I would think that just sitting down and writing would be a rough thing at times.
Well, because, I mean, when I'm talking about books with you or with Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition or when I'm doing public presentations about good books to read, I don't ever talk about a book that I don't think you should read. You know, I'm not negative about the books. I always feel like, you know, we only have a short amount of time together, and why should I waste time telling you what book not to read? And there are so many wonderful books out there that I wish that you would read.
But you are critical about the quality of writing.
I am totally critical about the quality of writing. And in fact, that is probably what makes me stop reading a book faster than anything.
Now, I know you also are quick to judge a first line of a novel. And your first line's pretty good. It gives us an entree into this story. It's the first chapter is titled How They Met, and the night Lizzie and George met, it was at the Bolarama way out on Washtenaw. She was flying high on some awfully good weed because her heart was broken. That's a pretty good first line.
That was the first line that I finally was satisfied with. All the other ones were just probably very slight variations of that, but that's the one that I think says it all and is the kind of first line that I love.
Yeah, I mean, it does open, but it was something you sweated over a lot.
Yes. I mean, I knew this was where they met. That first night when George and Lizzie came to me, appeared in my head, I mean, I knew what Lizzie's last name was. I knew where they met at the Bowlerama, but that's all I knew. And everything else just gradually appeared. I know it sounds bizarre. It sounds so woo-woo. But, gosh, that's exactly how it was.
The story of George and Lizzie is in some ways encapsulated in your little quote that you have before the first page, and it's from a poem by Terence Winch that I swear I've heard before. And basically, I'm going to summarize it. It's basically, you know, if you're involved with someone where the sex is so good it's like a fantasy, eventually you're in very, very serious trouble, and good luck to you. It won't last, and when it ends, you'll walk the floor and wear out your shoes. Where if the other hand, you're involved with someone where you have decent sex, it's good and normal, but you wouldn't think about it as like woo-woo, as you would say, as the fantasy world would say, then it's probably good enough. And that's sort of the story of this novel. Where did you hear that poem? Was that part of the process, or did you find that later?
No, I've had that poem. I have several notebooks of poetry and quotations, my favorite quotations from books, sentences that I'm just struck by when I'm reading, that I've been keeping since I was a freshman in college. And that's a poem that I read somewhere, I have no idea where, and then realized after George and Lizzie was done that perfectly encapsulates part of what the book is. And Terence Winch very, very generously allowed me to use the poem. And then at the end of the book, there's another poem that encapsulates, I think, very nicely another aspect of the book. And the executor of that author's estate gave me permission to do that.
So these characters were with you from the beginning. But as I mentioned, Lizzie she's an unusual character. Tell us a little bit about Lizzie.
Okay.
Lizzie is a young girl. We meet her as she's meeting George. But when we find out, she is a kid that really did not get much of attention from her parents. And I'm not sure if she came up with this sort of event that that has marked her life.
Right.
But it was basically, it seems like it was an attempt to get attention from her parents.
Yes, absolutely. So Lizzie grows up in a family of, her parents are academic psychologists. They're behaviorists. So much of what they do is run rats through a maze in a lab. They're very famous psychologists at the University of Michigan, bring in a lot of grant money. They never wanted children, and Lizzie was an unfortunate and unhappy surprise to them when she arrived. And they have really all Lizzie's life treated her as a subject, another rat, as you would, as they would, as Lizzie describes it at one point, I think, and don't love her. And Lizzie makes a really dumb decision at age 17, and I think that we all make dumb decisions. Not all of them have these enduring scars, which Lizzie's choice does in this case. But Lizzie is, as a result of her childhood, I think, she is what George, who is a very happy optimist, George would describe Lizzie as a pathological pessimist. And indeed, if you said to Lizzie, is the glass half full or half empty, Lizzie would say, you know, she would give you this stare like, what an idiot you are. And she would say, are you kidding me? The glass is totally empty. And you're imagining the water, whatever amount of water there's in there. So she and George really inhabit very different ways of looking at the world. And one of the things that I guess I was writing about was what kind of a relationship can be built on that? Can one be built on that? Lizzie is prickly, and she's not easy to get along with. And George loves her. His, I think, mission in life, he begins as a dentist and leaves his practice to become a motivational speaker, someone who believes that everything is an opportunity for growth. But what he really wants, I mean, he does all that because he really wants Lizzie to be happy, and he thinks she'll be happy if she'll just look at the world his way.
The ultimate project, in a way, but exactly. But there's a genuine affection.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and okay. And this is a story of options, opposite attract. So Lizzie makes this choice.
Yes.
And you want to keep that a secret for readers, but let's just put it this way. You go on about it in the book.
Well, Lizzie, I mean, it's, you know, she decides to do something that's really, really stupid and her...
And psychologically scarring,
and it does scar her psychologically, and yet she goes on and has, you know, a decent relationship with George and, you know, a wonderful friendship with her college roommate, and I love Lizzie. I feel like nobody should be punished forever for these stupid decisions or these stupid things we do as adolescents, or indeed probably adults, too.
My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our book reviewer and first-time novelist. Her new novel is titled George and Lizzie, a Novel. It's published by Touchstone. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, as one might expect with Nancy Pearl's writing, the book references come fast and quick in this.
Yeah.
But there's also another set of references that come in, and it's football references.
Right.
And she has a play-by-play going in her head. Where did this idea come from?
So I share many things with Lizzie, and one of those things that we share, we both are readers, and we both love poetry, and just coincidentally, we both love the same poets, the same four poets. We're just fans of A.E. Housman and Edna St. Vincent Millay and Philip Larkin and Dorothy Parker. But the other thing that we share, in a way, is that we both love football. And Lizzie has a love-hate relationship with football by the time she meets George. George is a huge football fan. And George, we should say, is a Tulsan.
Yes.
And goes to Oklahoma State and is a big fan of both the Dallas Cowboys and the OSU Cowboys. So we have to get that in because that was fun writing about Stillwater and Tulsa. So, you know, Lizzie's high school team is in Ann Arbor. It's a very good team, football team, you know, very highly ranked in the state and lots of interest among the students. And Lizzie dates the high school, the wide receiver, a guy named Maverick Brevard when she's a junior. I mean, it's just so fascinating to me. Yeah. Feels like I didn't have anything to do with it. It's just how it was.
So what I was going to ask about was Lizzie has this play-by-play going on in her head where it is basically every football analogy and sort of overused cliche going through her head as she's going through life. I thought that was really kind of interesting.
Well, she's really... you know, one interviewer asked me if I thought that she was an incipient schizophrenic, you know, because she hears these voices in her head and they're just very critical of her, and they're very critical of her in kind of football terms, which sounds bizarre, but I think is not when you read it. But I think, you know, I think that if you asked anyone, they would say they hear voices. They hear those critical voices in their heads. I mean, I think it's the rare person who doesn't have that kind of self-criticism.
Yeah, but what I like the fact that it's like every football cliche you ever hear on a broadcast. You know,
right? Yeah. Yeah.
The name of the book is George and Lizzie, a Novel. It's published by Touchstone. And, of course, the other part of the book is this idea that Lizzie does have a great love. He finds out about this poor decision that Lizzie once made.
Right.
And because her behavioral psychologist parents wrote it up.
Right. Yeah, that was a really betrayal on her parents' part. It was just a really unforgivable thing for them to do after they had basically promised her that they wouldn't say anything about what Lizzie did. And you know, again, I've been hearing from lots of readers who also have this great love in their life in college and are wondering what became of that person. And I think Lizzie shares that as well.
Let me ask you, do you think that's a lot of people do that from time to time. Do you think that's a dangerous thing or a natural thing that humans do, or what exactly?
Oh, you mean for those?
This idea of going back to find that one love.
Oh, right.
You know, I mean, that's pretty common. A lot of people will think about that. Usually it's a passing thought and you move on. But for some people, it can be a little more obsessive at some point. What's your thoughts on that?
So I think that one of the reasons that I wanted to set the book in the 1990s, which is when these kids are, when George and Lizzie are in college, is because I didn't want the whole Facebook internet as part of it. Because now I think a lot of people spend a lot of time on Facebook tracking down old friends or old boyfriends or old lovers. And that's something certainly that Lizzie is interested in doing, but she doesn't have the internet to make that easier. But I think that's very common.
You mentioned Tulsa plays a role. Tulsa and Ann Arbor, both places you lived.
Yes.
Was that a conscious decision, just to describe some place you knew?
Well, like with all of it, it didn't ever seem like it was a decision. It just seemed like it was a final, that's the way it was. It couldn't be any other way.
And George coming from Tulsa, is that does that say anything more than just
No.
George coming from Tulsa?
No, that's it. He's coming from Tulsa, and it gave me an opportunity to. It's Tulsa, but it's not a street by street. I mean, you're going to get lost if you would try to follow, what George does. But it's nice that the Arkansas River Walk.
Right.
Lizzie and George can go on that, and that was fun to kind of anchor it right there, have that as part of it.
Now, I mentioned the book references come pretty fast and quick, and I know there's probably some I didn't even get because I'm not as a big reader as you. Was that just fun with the book, or?
Well, if I was going to spend all this time that I did with Lizzie and George, and I really wanted somebody who I liked spending time with, and the people that I really enjoy spending time with are readers. So Lizzie had to be a reader.
Well, it's really a fun read, George and Lizzie, a novel. Are you still writing today, or was this just a one-time thing to get this book on paper?
Right. So I've been thinking about... I've been thinking about some of the minor characters, and because the book is set in the 1990s when they're in college, they're all going to be turning 50 right about now in 2017. And I think it would be really fun. I think I would enjoy thinking about and maybe writing about Maverick, for example, what he's doing in 2017, or Lizzie's best friend Marla. Both of whom I find interesting as interesting characters.
It's interesting because you gave Maverick a little bit of a backstory right at the very beginning, and then Maverick sort of disappears, only to pop up every now and again.
Right. Yeah. Because the book isn't about Maverick.
I know.
He was very important. He was important to Lizzie, and she looks back on her junior year in high school, her time with Maverick is one of the most untroubled times of her life, especially in comparison to her senior year.
Yeah. One of the things I found really interesting was the way you put the book together, where it's very episodic. You're moving from time period to time period. Was that your decision, or was that working with your editor, or what exactly?
So when my editor got the book, it was even more random than it is now, because, again, that's the kind of book that I enjoy. I enjoy going back and forth in time, and I don't need a straightforward, a river flowing in one direction. And she just had what I think is a brilliant suggestion, which was to make George and Lizzie's relationship from the time they meet for about 10 years, 15 years on, as the central, as what we're following as we're moving through the book. But then around that river, if you will, little bits of their pasts and different events in their lives, their families.
Well, we wish you great success. So what's been the reaction from, you have such a reader's following. Are you already getting feedback from a lot of those readers?
I am. And I, you know, people, one woman said, emailed me or put it on Facebook, I guess she said, oh, reading about Lizzie and Jack, and Jack is Lizzie's great love, and we're not giving anything away because that's in the very first, the second paragraph, I think, helped her deal with her own conflicted feelings about somebody in her past. So people are really relating to it, and really, I mean, just feeling what I hoped readers would take away from the book is, I hope that by the end of the book, they would feel that they knew these people really well, and that when they finished the book, that George and Lizzie would still be with them, that they would think about them.
Now, I know you still do a lot of other reading of other writers. Has this experience changed how you think about the writing process and when you're as a reader?
Well, I think that what it has done is it's made me much more aware of the decisions that writers make. So, for example, I'll be reading a novel, and I'll get to the close to the end, and something will occur, and I'll think, oh, that's why this other thing happened in the beginning of the book, because it was going to lead to this. So the whole issue of structure has become something that I really never thought about or didn't think about.
You wanted a good read, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And now the structure becomes more important as you as you found through firsthand experience, I guess.
Right, right.
Well, we wish you great success. Looking forward to your appearance here. George and Lizzie, a novel by my guest and our book reviewer, Nancy Pearl. Nancy, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Rich.
Nancy Pearl is our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa and the new author of her first novel, George and Lizzie, a novel, is published by Scribner. She'll be talking and signing her book this evening at 7 o'clock at Central Library in conjunction with BookSmart Tulsa. That event is free and open to the public. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Taylor at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days' notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.